It is high noon when Jesus stops to rest by the well of Jacob. The hottest, sultriest, most languorous part of the day. An unlikely time for any human encounter, especially one laden with this complexity and drama. And what was she doing there, this woman? And how odd, these two, a Jew and a Samaritan, man and a woman, perfect purity and a complete wreck of a life, talking, conversing even, utter freedom and utter bondage, seeking to commune, but differently, to connect, but differently. Could anything be more improbable? There are other questions, of course, aren't there? The ones we don't admit to thinking about or else gossiping about. What was the Samaritan woman looking for in those six men? Come to think of it, what was Elizabeth Taylor really looking for in all her successive marriages and many lovers? But as we all know, some of us all too well, addictive, destructive passions of any variety are always about something more than meets the eye. How difficult, and with what struggle, and a certain sad suffering even, the secret desires of the human heart, our hearts. I've always thought that Liz Taylor's character Maggie had it about right regarding human nature when she said, "I feel like a cat on a hot tin roof, just holding on as long as she can." Who hasn't ever felt that way at some point or another? Hot, dry, parched, brittle and vulnerable, thirsting for something we can't quite know or describe or perhaps admit to, and just trying to hang on by our fingernails to keep from going over the ledge into the abyss. Tennessee Williams seems always to plumb the dark mystery of the center of our existential selves, doesn't he? He would know. When this man Jesus says to her, "Give me a drink," can you even begin to imagine what heart-pounding, knot in the stomach, tired to the bone, perspiring anguish ran through this woman? Oh God, another, just like all the rest of them. I know, I'll deflect. Dodge the question, change the subject, shift to the other foot, retreat, hide, lie, anything but the truth. Little did she know but that the truth, who is love, is in control of this encounter. And there comes to light, brighter than that noonday sun, the real dilemma, the deep-seated waywardness of her existence. She is brought face to face with the truth of herself. Nothing and no one else having ever really satisfied her deepest cravings, she has looked in the eye, into the recessions of her baked as hard as clay soul, and offered the refreshing, cleansing, cooling, thirst-slaking water of real life. If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, "Give me a drink," you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. I am he, the one who is speaking to you. And he is speaking to you and to me. Her elemental thirst, which is ours as well, is assuaged only by such an honesty, the true telling of all the ways we really are, all that we have really done, by a true love that heals and binds up our self-inflicted wounds and futile passions. More than a mere promise of changed behavior, she is converted in her core being. For in the depths of my own self, I am sure that I am meant to be more than I am. I have a potential that I have not yet realized. I have betrayed it many times. But I know there is more to me than my many false selves, more to me than I know. When we listen to Jesus' words, "I am the water of life, the well that gushes forth unto eternal satisfaction," or "I am come that they might have life and might have it more abundantly," we are certain Christ is speaking directly to us. We can feel the absence of the unlived aspects of ourselves, and that lack, that void, that aching void creates in us a longing. The response to it is called conversion. That is why Blessed John Henry Newman stated that conversion is nothing more than a deeper discovery of what we already desire. And there lies baptismal balm. There is true freedom and the beginning of release from human bondage to sin. Lent is a season of conversion. And being converted, wrote Father Anthony Sertilage, is simply meeting yourself for the purpose of going to the very end of your being. Conversion means a willingness to see the truth of things and conform to it. And when we don't see the truth of things, the truth about ourselves, a kind of agitation takes over. St. Augustine sensed that our hearts are restless until they rest in God. The Venerable John Paul II once wrote that the basic human drama is the failure to perceive the meaning of life, to live without a meaning. Lenten conversion addresses that critical omission in our lives. The first words of Jesus in the Gospel of St. John are, "What are you looking for?" What are the desires that drive us? Are they really enough? Do they lead us to true satisfaction? Or do they leave us wanting more? There was a young Frenchman by the name of Jacques Fesch who was sentenced to death in 1957 for murdering a police officer during a foiled robbery attempt. Fesch experienced a profound conversion to the faith in his prison cell, and recalling it, he wrote, "I was in bed, eyes open, really suffering for the first time in my life. It was then that a cry burst from my breast, an appeal for help, my God, and instantly, like a violent wind which passes over without anyone knowing where it comes from, the Spirit of the Lord seized me by the throat. I had an impression of infinite power and kindness. And from that moment onward, I believed with an unshakable conviction that has never left me." Why could such a tremendous grace take hold in a person whose life was as despicable as Jacques Fesch's? Because, as Father Yves Congar explains, conversion is effected by putting oneself in the presence of the living God at an existential point, a point where there is nothing but God and our true selves, from which he has brushed away, as it were, the various havings of our lives that serve us as alibis and lead us to evade the decisive issues of being. Are we willing to put ourselves in that existential point of being this Lent? And if what I am saying about conversion moves you, it is because the Lord himself has come close to you and is beckoning you to follow him. Perhaps it is high noon for you, hot, thirsty, weary of life, weary of the struggle of just hanging on as long as you can. It can be different. Wondrous thing about conversion is that the new creature we become is so real and so transformed that we joyfully forget the way we were before. In Shakespeare's play, As You Like It, the evil character Oliver conspires to murder his helpless brother Orlando. But Oliver undergoes a powerful conversion, and he witnesses to it when he says in a kind of confession, I do not shame to tell you what I was, since my conversion so sweetly tastes, being the thing I am now. Conversion to God always consists in discovering God's mercy, God's love. Just ask the Samaritan woman. He told me everything I have ever done. His searing truth did not consume me. It washed me clean through. Come and see. Amen.